Okay. Before we have our quiet time, let's all get on the same page. If you're in the Sparkly Book, it's page 287. Sorry. If you're in the Sparkly Book, it's page 291. The last paragraph. If you're in the second edition, it's page 248, paragraph 6, line 2. If you're in the first edition, it's page 231, last paragraph, second sentence. And if you're in the JCIM, it's page 122, last paragraph. I'll read it one more time. Sparkly Book, 291, last paragraph. Second edition, 248, paragraph 6, line 2. First paragraph, 231, last paragraph, second sentence. And JCIM, 122, last paragraph. Okay. Let's take a few moments to be quiet together. Okay. Good evening. And welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet. We're going to go right into the book tonight. And I'm going to back up one sentence. As you look with open eyes upon your world, it must occur to you that you have withdrawn into insanity. Now, we've talked at length for the last couple of weeks using Paul as the object lesson so that you might grasp what this sentence means. As you look with open eyes upon your world, it must occur to you that you have withdrawn into insanity. There are those who are listening every Saturday night who do not like to hear this or question my using the word orphan as something that applies to each one of you. After all, if you are the Christ, as I have also said all along, then everything about you must be all right. If you are the offspring of God, then right now everything must be all right. It must be, you must be, the way God planned for you to be. After all, He gave you free will. If he gave you free will, he gave it to you to exercise. Therefore, everything you're doing currently and everything that your fellow man is doing currently is a reflection of the will of God, because he gave you free will. Everything that you're doing, whether anyone likes what you're doing or not, must be in divine order. This is very dangerous thinking, and it is thinking. You are all experiencing, quote, the human condition, unquote. Every single one of you knows that if you could choose, you wouldn't choose for the human condition. Suffering, sickness, death, anguish, grief, abuse. And if perchance you happen to have an experience that is relatively smooth and pleasant, you cannot for a moment totally relax and have confidence in its continuity. This is the human condition. If you are experiencing what I have described to any degree, you are asleep. You are, in other words, not awake, not consciously experiencing reality, the reality of you as the Christ, the reality of you as God is being you right now. And because you are not experiencing it, you are having, for lack of any better words, an experience of being alone, isolated, vulnerable, without a source. In other words, without a source that is even, that is unvariable, that is characterized by joy and peace and invulnerability, you are experiencing being an orphan. An orphan is not what you are, but you are not going to wake up until you call your current experience into question. If you don't call your current experience into question, you will imagine a God who has set things up so that your current condition, situation, is on purpose, and therefore must be fulfilling purpose. And therefore you will accept everything that is going on, endure it, and struggle mightily to change it into a better experience. Last week I shared with you that you are experiencing ignorance, that you are experiencing being isolated from your source, being sourceless, an orphan, that you are preoccupied with what you believe everything is, which you have come to say you know everything is, as though what you know is a fact, and that you are coping with life on the basis of memory and imagination. Memory of the past, imagination of the future, which pulled together cause you to behave in ways in the present that have nothing to do with the present, nothing to do with the now. That is insanity. And if it is not said clearly and succinctly, as it says right here, as you look with open eyes upon your world, in other words, with insight, it must occur to you that you have withdrawn into insanity. You must look at that squarely, else you will not genuinely and with commitment look for an alternative, be open to an alternative, and you will stay stuck in the eddy you're in, circling around repetitiously and never getting back into the mainstream. As you look with open eyes upon your world, it must occur to you that you have withdrawn into insanity. You see what is not there, and you hear what is soundless. Now, much of this is a repetition, a summation of what we've been reading for the last couple of weeks, and so I'm not going to elaborate on each thing because I've already gone into them in great detail. You see what is not there, and you hear what is soundless. Your behavioral manifestations of emotions are the opposite of what the emotions are. You communicate with no one, and you are as isolated from reality as if you were alone in all the universe. In your madness, you overlook reality completely. As I said, Paul spent 5 days at Disneyland and overlooked it completely. That doesn't mean that he was preoccupied with the things that he ought to be back at home doing. It means that as he was at Disneyland, he was interpreting everything that was going on there in a mean-spirited way. He was giving definitions to everything he saw, different from what was happening. He seemed to be present with it, but he torqued his perception. And did it most unkindly, most judgmentally, most arrogantly. And I said, he was surrounded by thousands of people, and he was alone. In your madness, in his madness, you overlook reality completely. He overlooked Disneyland completely. The meaning of it, the experience of it, what was really going on. And you see, he saw, only your own split mind everywhere you look. Now, as I also clarified last week, this describes every single one of you now, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year, because you are experiencing, quote, the human condition, unquote. You're not free of it yet. And so you are in the middle of the kingdom of heaven, not seeing it. Right now, you are in the middle of the kingdom of heaven. You are in the middle of reality, and you are not seeing it. Now, when the ego tries to split hairs and say, okay, I'm in the middle of the kingdom of heaven right now, and there are accidents occurring, people are running into telephone poles, knocking out the electricity, and the people that live in their homes without electricity are going to lose the food in their freezers, and they're going to have to change their schedule so that the kids can have something to eat, and life is generally difficult. That's just one tiny example. And this is life every day, in one form or another. You are not awake. In your madness, you overlook reality completely, and you see only your own split mind everywhere you look. That's life for every single one of you, even though you have your moments, your high spots, your breakthroughs, your illuminations, and healings here and there. But remember that I said early on that healing is the is coming to the place where you are free of the liability to be ill. Not just that if you get ill, you can have a healing, but to arrive at a point where you are free of the liability to be ill. Now, God calls you, and you do not hear, for you are preoccupied with your own voice. Disneyland called to Paul, but he did not hear, because he was preoccupied with his own voice. But now, in a larger sense that applies to everyone, whether you're going to Disneyland or not, or whether you're at Disneyland or not, everything in your experience is the visibility and tangibility of God, and it calls for you to recognize it. It calls for you to hear it. Why? So that in hearing it and recognizing it, you experience God. You are able to glorify God because of your recognition of God in every little thing. Every little thing that's already in your world. And to glorify God is your function. To glorify God is to recognize and stand in awe of, to feel the awesomeness of, to feel the wonder of, and to feel that the underlying nature and substance of what you're experiencing is a love beyond anything you have experienced yet. Stable, even, full, and extending. God calls you out of everything you see, and you do not hear, for you are preoccupied with your own voice. And this really means the voice in your head that declares that the past is valuable and dependable, and the voice in your head that says it can use imagination to predict the future, and thereby, based upon the past, control it better for a better experience. And the vision of Christ is not in your sight, for you look upon yourself alone. The idea is suggested that the truth is utterly simple, and that the simplicity of it is that you must learn to look at your life, the human condition, and accept it for what it is. Accept it as God functioning, and being in ways that contribute to your growth, that cause you to develop and become more and be a greater fulfillment of yourself. It is as though the suggestion is that the simplicity is in accepting everything as it is currently being experienced. This is very satisfying to the ego because it doesn't challenge its fundamental premise, which is that it is alone, that it is isolated, and that it, by its own efforts and its own developed skills, can ultimately prove that it really exists, and that it, in its isolated state, is absolutely real. But the simplicity of all of this is that you have a means of stilling this inner voice that proudly holds up memory, the past, and says, I am the sum total of all of my experiences. You've all heard that phrase. Well, he's the sum total of his experiences, and if you look at the experiences he was confronted with, it's obvious why he thinks or she thinks and behaves the way he or she does. She or he is the sum total of his past experiences. You see, the ego holds up and values the past as though it is what is making it actual. The simplicity of waking up lies in stilling that voice, becoming still, becoming quiet, and doing what? Saying, help. Reaching out beyond memory, reaching out beyond everything swirling around in your mind, and joining with something beyond you. That is the simplicity of it. And the ego doesn't like that, because in joining, its autonomy is lost. The vision of Christ is not in your sight. For you look upon yourself alone, unjoined, unconscious of anything to join with, and heavily guarded against any subtle invitation to abandon your autonomy and join. And so you secure yourself in the eddy, the wheel of history. Little children, would you offer this to your father? Everything in your experience calls to you to see God in it. You say, I see what I see in it. I see what I have determined everything is, and no, I do not see God in it. So the call to recognize God has come, and that is what you have given back, a denial, an unwillingness to see. Little children, would you offer this to your Father? For if you offer it to yourself, you are offering it to Him, and He will not return it. For it is unworthy of you because it is unworthy of Him. What's the connection there? Well, it's unworthy of you because it's unworthy of me, God says. No, it's not that kind of separated authoritative stance. When you have forgotten who you are, that who you are is determined by that which is sourcing you. You have gotten the divorce from your Father that we talked about at great length. And yet you don't cease being the direct expression of God. When you say, I came from a sperm and an egg, I'm a physical organism, a part of evolution, and either there is no God, or God set this all in motion way, way back, and now we're free and bound to fend for ourselves, you are thinking in a manner that is unworthy of your real divine stature. You are offering something to yourself that you are unworthy of. And in offering to yourself what you are unworthy of, you are offering it to the Father, because the Father is what gives you your existence. The movement of God is what constitutes your being. And so when you offer this to yourself, you are offering it to the Father, and the Father will not return it. He will not acknowledge what you are giving, because it's unworthy of Him and it's unworthy of you, because it is a lie. It is an illusion. It is an imagination. Now, I mentioned a little bit ago that you, for the most part, most of you, believe that God gave you free will. And I'm going to agree with that. He did give you free will. But He didn't give you free will to do the impossible. And to try to be, and to pretend to be, an orphan is to try to be something you cannot be. And so you will get no confirmation from the Father. And not being able to be or do something impossible is not a violation of your free will. Is that clear? I'm not looking at you specifically. The fact that you cannot do the impossible is not a violation of a capacity God gave to you, which was to exercise free will. Just let that sink in for a moment. When you try to do the impossible, you are confronted with the impossibility of it. That confrontation is uncomfortable. There is no peace to it. It is an experience of disturbance. Not because God has looked down and said, "You are being disobedient and I am going to punish you," but because when you try to do what you cannot possibly do, it's like pressing your fist into the Rock of Gibraltar with all of your might. It isn't going to be comfortable. It will be full of stress and strain and pain that will always be equal to the amount of force you are bringing to bear against that which will not move. And the solution, therefore, is always to stop trying to do the impossible. Little children, would you offer this to your Father? For if you offer it to yourself, you are offering it to Him, and He will not return it. For it is unworthy of you, because it is unworthy of Him. Yet He would release you from it and set you free. He would. His sane answer tells you that what you have offered yourself is not true, but His offering to you has never changed. You who know not what you do can learn what insanity is, and if what I've been sharing with you is registering with you, you are learning what insanity is. You don't want to learn what it is, but you are learning what it is, and hopefully you are not going to continue to try to push it out of your mind. Here's the key. You who know not what you do can learn what insanity is. And look beyond it. And that's the point. To just look at what insanity is and how you're practicing it would be depressing if you stopped there. If you see that you have yourself boxed in or locked into an eddy, you must reach outside of the box. Look beyond it. You must invite something else in. Invite something else into the privacy that you value so greatly and the autonomy that is essential to your worth. It is given you to learn how to deny insanity. And let me say again, if you're unwilling to acknowledge that insanity is occurring, you will not be able to arrive at a point where you deny it, which is an absolutely essential step in order to get beyond it. It is given you to learn how to deny insanity and what? Come forth from your private world in peace. And I want the last two words to register with you. In peace. It is given you to learn how to deny insanity and come forth from your private world in peace with grace. Not struggle, not strain. not you lifting yourself up by your bootstraps. You will see all that you have denied in your brothers because you denied it in yourself. You will see all that you denied in your brothers because you denied it in yourself. Everything that you deny in yourself right now, you disallow for seeing in your brothers. It is impossible for you to conceive that they might actually be further ahead of you, or in advance of you, or superior to you in any significant, meaningful way. If you are untrustworthy, if you lie, if you are deceitful, you will see whoever seems to be in advance of you or more successful of you than you as having achieved what they've achieved through the same sort of deceit and dishonesty that you employ. You will not be able to see that perhaps their fulfillment is because they have left the orphanage. They have abandoned isolation. They have found the place of excellence within them and have yielded into it. They have reached outside of their box. You will not be able to see that, because the measuring stick you use for yourself is always applied to one degree or another to everyone you see and everything you see. You will see all that you denied in your brothers because you denied it in yourself, for you will love them. Really love them, because you've abandoned the orphan mentality. And by drawing nigh unto them, you will draw them to yourself, perceiving them as witnesses to your reality, which you share with God. But you will not have that experience of your reality, which you share with God, until you invite God in, until you abandon your arrogant independence until you abandon your belief in the absolute necessity of your autonomy. I am with them as I am with you. I am with them as I am with you and as I am with Paul. And we will, you and I will, draw them from their private worlds. For as we are united, not separated, not independent. For as we are united, so would we unite with them. The Father welcomes all of us in gladness. And gladness is what we should offer him. For every son of God is given you, to whom God gave himself. God gave himself to you by being all there is of you. And every son of God is given to you, just as every other thing, infinitely speaking, in all of creation is given to you to recognize God in and to experience the perfection of, the unvariable perfection of. For every son of God is given you to whom God gave himself, and it is God whom you must offer them. How do you offer them God? Well, when you're willing to be in the gap between memory and imagination, when you're willing to be in the gap, vision with a capital V becomes yours. And your capacity to recognize and acknowledge what's really happening, the presence of God in each and everything, constitutes your gift of recognition of God. And that's the only thing you have to share. And I will tell you something. When you have this experience and you share it, it is joy shared. And it is very attractive. And it is God whom you must offer them. Again, when you've moved into the little gap and you're recognizing God, all you have present in your mind to share or extend is that experience of God. And it is God whom you must offer them to recognize his gift to you. You will never get a private realization of the godness of you. The realization of God is one that brings with it an indisputable awareness that God is in everything. And so that is what you extend. That is what your action embodies. And we spoke last week about what vision is, and so I'm not going to repeat myself. Vision depends on light. Another word for light is illumination. That which makes things clear. Vision depends on light, and you cannot see in darkness. Yet in the darkness, in the private world of sleep, meaning at night, you see in dreams, although your eyes are closed. And it is here that what you see, you made. But let the darkness go, and all you made, you will no longer see. In other words, when you allow for your eyes to flutter open in the morning, everything you were seeing will not be there. But let the darkness go, and all you made, you will no longer see, for sight of it depends upon denying vision. Remember, last week I mentioned that as vision dawns upon your sight, everything you currently see with your eyes will still look generally the same, but your eyes will not be the source of what you're seeing. You will not be depending upon your eyes to see it. The reference point for what you're seeing will be vision with a capital V. Mind, undistorted in any way by any preoccupation with memory or imagination. Let the darkness go, and all you made, you will no longer see, for sight of it depends upon denying vision. Yet, from denying vision, it does not follow that you cannot see. That's important. To not heavily weight, W-E-I-G-H-T, to heavily weight the importance of what your eyeballs see, what the retina registers and transmits to a brain, is to distract yourself from the fact that what you're looking with is your mind, and that you are seeing what is in mind, because consciousness is where everything is going on. Yet from denying vision, it does not follow that you cannot see. But this is what denial does, for by it you accept insanity, believing you can make a private world and rule your own perceptions. And that's what Paul did for 5 days. He made his own private world and ruled his own perceptions. And although there was something real there for him to see, he did not see it. Yet, for this, light, insight, illumination, must be excluded. When you're preoccupied with your own thoughts, you are not letting any other source of illumination of anything to exist for you except your memory and your imagination. It's absolutely private and has nothing to do with your eyes at all. Dreams disappear when light has come and you can see. Do not seek vision through your eyes, for you made your way of seeing. Paul made his way of seeing, that you might see in darkness. And in this you are deceived. That's why I say, whenever you look at anything, look at it, be willing to look at it with innocent eyes, minus preconceptions, and with a desire to see the more that is there than what you're currently seeing. Beyond this darkness, beyond your incapacity to see what's really there, beyond this darkness, and yet still within you, is the vision of Christ. But Father, I'd rather do it my own, my way. I'd rather see it my way. I'd rather see it alone. But, and here we come back to the simplicity of things. If you will abandon your autonomy and your extreme valuing of it, and you will join with something else, meaning the Christ, his vision will be shared with you, which will be an uncovering of your real vision. But that will not happen as long as you find a way to justify being isolated and independent from God. Do not seek vision through your eyes, for you made your way of seeing that you might see in darkness, that you might experience things truly in the midst of ignorance. And in this you are deceived. Beyond this darkness, and yet still within you, is the vision of Christ, who looks on all in light. Your vision as an orphan comes from fear, as his, the Christ's, from love. And here's what cannot happen as long as you are maintaining independence. And he, the Christ, me, sees for you as your witness to the real world. It is so simple. It is so utterly simple, the answer. I am here, as I am with you right now in this fashion, and I am here with each of you individually as I am with Paul individually. For what purpose? To share my vision. I will cautiously say, to share my perspective. To say it in a way that can't be misconstrued, I am here to share how creation looks to that which is forming it, God. I am not here to share my personal perspective, but the truth, as God is being it and being conscious of it, being mindful with a capital M of it. He, me, the Christ, is the Holy Spirit's manifestation, looking always on the real world. And calling forth its witnesses, and drawing them unto you. For he loves what he sees within you, and he would extend it. But to extend it means involvement, an absence of privacy, an absence of independence. Which means you're going to have to abandon the great valuing and commitment you bring to being an orphan. For he loves what he sees within you, and he would extend it. And he will not return unto the Father. I will not return unto the Father until he, I, have extended your perception even unto him, the Father. And there, perception is no more. For he has returned you to the Father with him. I have returned you to the Father with me. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. No man cometh unto the Father but by one who is awake, one who is fully aware of what he divinely is, one who is not in any fashion denying his Christhood, one who is not in any way denying that he has a Father from whom all that has meaning, and indeed his very existence, comes from. You have but two emotions, and one you made, and one was given you. One you, the orphan, made. One that you, the neat little one all by himself, doing his best and getting better at it. one was made by that, created by that, by your own hard effort, and you sure as hell can take credit for it. But the other was given to you, a gift. Well, a gift has to come from someone else. That a gift is proffered and received means that a shift in the receiver's mind has to occur that's willing to embrace that there is something else that can actually extend something that none of the other orphans can extend. Something that comes from a place beyond memory and imagination. You have but two emotions, and one you made, one you made up, and one was given you. Each is a way of seeing. Oh boy, you got to be careful of this one. Each is a way of seeing. The orphan can say, wow, you mean all I have to do is adopt a different way of seeing? Okay, I'll make up a different way of seeing. I'll make up a different way of seeing. I'll make up a way of seeing, that allows me to look at everything in its awfulness and describe it in fairer terms, and I'll find a way of looking at it and construe it so that I can present a facade of evenness and happiness. And I'll just find another way of seeing. I'll make up another way of seeing. No, that's no shift at all, because no movement out of privacy has occurred, no joining has occurred, which is the essential element. Each is a way of seeing, and different worlds arise from their different visions. Now indeed, you can change your attitude, and you can change your way of seeing, and indeed the world you see will be different for you. I assure you that if I told Paul to go to Disneyland this next weekend, he would have a heck of a lot better time this time than he did last time. Why? Because he's going to look at it differently. But is he going to look at it with me? Different worlds arise from their different visions. The world that arises from the vision you made up is imaginary. The world that arises from love is the real world, seen for what it is, because you're no longer introducing any bias into it. See through the vision that is given you. Accept the gift. Let it undo your sense of isolation. Let it undo your right to prove your almighty confident self. See through the vision that is given you. For through Christ's vision, he beholds himself. Through your divine vision, you will see the Christ that you are. And seeing what he is, what? He knows his Father. When you see who you are, you know that you are nothing all by yourself. You will know that you have no existence all by yourself. When you see yourself as you are, you will see yourself as that which God is presencing of Himself infinitely right there where you are. You will know who you are because you will know what is sourcing you. And it will not be an intellectual realization. It will be an experiential. It will be experiential. Beyond your darkest dreams, He, the Christ, sees God's guiltless Son within you. He, the Holy Spirit, sees God's guiltless Son within you, shining in perfect radiance, which is undimmed by your dreams, undimmed by your preoccupation with orphanhood, and rallying the orphans around you in the orphanage to help get you the things you think you want, and to negotiate with them and barter with them and kiss ass with them so that they think you're giving them something they want so that you ultimately can get what you want, and so on. Beyond your darkest dreams, He sees God's guiltless Son within you, shining in perfect radiance, which is undimmed by all of that bullshit. Undimmed by your dreams. And this you will see as you look with Him. For His vision is His gift of love to you, given Him of the Father for you. I am here for one purpose, to help you fulfill your purpose. And for you to no longer be distracted by purposes you have imagined for yourself and set yourself the task of accomplishing. The Holy Spirit, that which is nothing more than your right mind, is the light in which Christ stands revealed. And all who would behold Him can see Him, for they have asked for light. What does that mean, asking for light? When you're fed up, finally, with suffering, when you're fed up with the struggle, and you're ready to give up, you will say, help. But you don't have to wait until the dire end of your capacity to persist. You can say, help at any time. It just needs to be genuine. And all who would behold Him can see Him, for they have asked for light. Nor will they see Him alone, for He is no more alone than they are, meaning all who would behold Him. Because they saw the Son, they have risen in Him, either the Christ or the Holy Spirit, to the Father. You come home. You come home not to glory in the sky, but you come home to your right mind, where your mind is not being used for purposes it can't accomplish. And all this will they understand? All this will you understand? Because they looked within and saw beyond the darkness the Christ in them. I will repeat myself incessantly on this point so that you cannot easily ignore it or deny that you know it. All this will they understand because they looked within and saw beyond the darkness. How can you see beyond the darkness? Not by saying, the darkness was created by God, and it must have a divine purpose, and I must just accept it as it is and find the perfection in the chaos. Find perfection in the suffering, you see. You will not see beyond the darkness until you break the element that is itself the darkness. And the element that is itself the darkness is independence, is autonomy, is self-existence. And when you abandon that and find yourself in the little gap of now that is itself part of eternity, reality, the experience of the Christ, of me, of the Christhood of your fellow man, of your Christhood, will emerge and grow in your awareness, and you will say, I know, I understand, it's utterly clear to me, it's infinitely utterly clear to me, and I am able to embrace this infinite clarity and not feel overwhelmed by it, even though the experience of infinity is something I didn't know I could bear. The Holy Spirit is the light in which Christ stands revealed, in which you stand revealed, and all who would behold him can see him, for they have asked for light. Nor will they see him alone, for he is no more alone than they are. Because they saw the Son, S-O-N, they have risen in him to the Father, and all this will they understand, because they looked within and saw beyond the darkness, but still within, I'm adding that, the Christ in them, and recognized him. See, no longer saying, no, I don't see the Christ there. I see what I believe it is, and what I say it is what it is, until I say it's something else, and then it will be that until I say it is something else. But it isn't what it really is. And all this will you understand, because you looked within and saw beyond the darkness the Christ in them, and recognized him in the sanity of his vision. They looked upon themselves with love, seeing themselves as the Holy Spirit sees them, seeing yourselves and everything as that which is nothing more than your right mind sees them. And with this vision of the truth in them, in you, came, or comes, all the beauty of the world to shine upon them, to shine upon you. You would understand if I said to Paul, don't ever go to Disneyland again and miss it. And I'm saying, don't spend another day in the kingdom of heaven and miss it. Be willing to use your mind for something other than employing memory or imagination. Paul feels my meaning in these words. I really love you tonight. But it isn't that I love you more tonight than any other night. And it isn't that you deserve it more than any other night. It is, those are the words that come because of the sighs, the energy of the love that Paul feels coming from me to all of you. I look forward to being with you all next week. I want you to remember, it is given you to learn how to deny insanity and come forth from your private world in peace with grace.